Portage Health Foundation is proud to introduce you to Superior Educator Tristan Baranowski from CLK Elementary School. Ms. Baranowski is an educator who completely understands that teachers who show their students that they care about them have students that perform to the best of their abilities. Students of all abilities are celebrated and encouraged to reach for the stars. Her positive tone of teaching makes students comfortable and helps them go in the right direction. If you know an amazing educator like Ms. Baranowski, go to superioreducators.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Superior Educator.
Welcome once again to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation. It was a couple of weeks ago that I wrote another story for Keweenaw Report about another drug arrest. It was a woman charged with bringing methamphetamine into the Hancock area. And as I wrote it, I recalled an item that we had put on our community calendar that Sheriff Josh Saarinen from Houghton County was doing a presentation for the Keweenaw Unitarian Universalist Fellowship about the drug situation in Houghton County and where we stood with that and how the fight was going. And I thought that would be a good topic to bring on Copper Country Today and timely. So I welcome Sheriff Josh Saarinen to the program. Thank you for joining me, Sheriff.
Yeah, good morning, sir. Thanks for having me.
The fight against drugs, boy, oh boy, I've been reporting this now for 40 plus years. And I'm not sure that we're seeing a whole lot of improvement. Are we seeing any?
You know, with we have a solid narcotics interdiction team here with Upset West. You know, drug trends have been increasing and have changed here in Houghton County, even within the last 10 years.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit about how things have changed, because this does seem to go in cycles. There are drugs that become very popular, other drugs fade, and all of a sudden I see the old ones coming back. What changes have you seen over the last decade?
Sure, so I'll back up a little bit, and I remember as a police recruit in 2004 going through police academy. I can't remember the instructor's name at the time, but they kind of alluded to the fact that you know, there's a methamphetamine problem growing in the United States, and they predicted at that time, within about 10 years, that methamphetamine would hit the Upper Peninsula, and unfortunately, that was about the right timeline, and we did start seeing crystal methamphetamine coming into our area in the early 20-teens.
Now, for those of us who are not familiar with these types of drugs, I don't spend a lot of time with them. Crystal methamphetamine is what and does what to you if you take it?
So crystal methamphetamine is a manufactured drug of methamphetamine. It would be more like a speed or an upper, for a lack of better terms. People take it, and you would get you know, almost increased energy, increased heartbeat, so on and so forth. And again, crystal methamphetamine is manufactured in lab settings, typically south of the border in Mexico.
That was going to be my next question. Do we see it being manufactured here in bathrooms and things like that, or do we see most of it being imported?
Sure. So most of it is being imported. I'd spent a couple of years as a narcotics detective on Upset West, and during that time, there is another type of methamphetamine, what's commonly referred to as shake and bake on the street, and that's methamphetamine that can be manufactured in meth labs, and we've seen that in the news. We've seen that throughout the UP in different places. Houghton County, we've had a few cases that people are manufacturing or cooking, quote-unquote, for a lack of better terms. But the majority of the methamphetamine coming in is crystal methamphetamine, and that's due to the fact that the availability and the cost.
The stuff that this methamphetamine is made from, this is nasty stuff.
Yeah. When people are cooking it, they're using, you know, cutting open lithium batteries, using the lithium battery strips, different types of chemicals. You know, and there is a risk of these labs catching on fire and exploding. So that's, I know we've done public safety announcements throughout the Upper Peninsula, especially in the springtime when we're doing roadside pickups and so on and so forth. If anybody sees anything that looks suspicious, a bottle with a tube coming out of it, or you know, liquid inside that looks funny, we really encourage them not to touch it, to give us a call, and we can come and take a look at it just to make sure that we're safe.
And I know that there have been instances in which these labs have been set up in houses, and by the time they get done, the house is actually a toxic chemical site.
Yep, that's right. A few of the labs that we've investigated, we've had to post the house through the health department, saying that dwelling is no longer, nobody can occupy it until it's been inspected and or cleaned up, depending on the severity or how much toxic chemicals are in there.
Yeah, one of the side effects is that there have been an awful lot of landlords that have been burned by this, because obviously if you arrest somebody for causing a meth contamination problem inside the house, they're probably not going to be in a position to pay to have it cleaned up.
Yep, that's correct. It could be awfully spendy. As a landlord and community member, I just got to be very careful who you have in your buildings.
What is the attraction to methamphetamine? I know you said that it gives you a lot of energy, it probably keeps you awake, that kind of thing. What is the attraction of that? I mean, frankly, I think if I were going to take a drug, I would take a drug to relax.
Yeah, so I think the biggest challenge with methamphetamine is the addictive nature of it. Working with clients and the people that I've worked with that have been users, kind of all report the same. It's a real bad habit, real tough thing to crack. And I have read statistics in the past where if a methamphetamine user that has an addiction problem and they're able to quit that addiction problem, even if they use methamphetamine one more time, they're pretty much 100% going to be back to wanting to use the substance. So the addictive nature of it is definitely the challenge.
We have learned a lot about the process of addiction over the last few years and the changes that it actually causes in the brain. It was not that long ago that we looked at addicts as being degenerates, that this was a moral problem, that they were just weak and users. Now we start to understand that some of this addiction is actually more of a physical situation, and it's not as easy for them to quit as we might think. How has that changed your approach to drug users as a law enforcement officer?
Yeah, that's a really good point. There is stigma associated with that, and anybody could potentially be vulnerable to addiction. And I would never say that it would just be degenerates. I mean, there's people that have been addicted, lawyers, police officers, hospital workers, I'm sure, that have struggled with it. I think that in the future, and what we're doing here is not only focusing on, arresting people bringing drugs into the community. We're not looking at trying to arrest the people that are struggling with addiction locally here. We're trying to get the drugs before they come into our county line. And a big part of that, too, is working with our substance abuse counselors. The 97th District Court has an excellent drug court program that they've had many, many success stories out of already. And then just in our jail here, throughout the last year, we've been kind of working on programs to get additional counselors and help to come in that people can kind of, individuals can segue from our facility into that drug court program and hopefully be able to help themselves to get out, be addiction free, and live a productive life.
Explain how that drug court program works, Sheriff.
You know, so they have a drug court administrator, essentially. I'm not sure how their whole program works. I know they meet quite often as a court. There's stipulations, and I don't want to go too far into the weeds in that just because I'm not 100% aware. But they go through the program and eventually graduate, and they're given the tools, from what I understand, to become addiction-free, whether that be drugs or alcohol or other substances.
And typically that also involves an opportunity perhaps to have the record expunged if they complete the program successfully?
You know, that's a good question, Todd. I don't know that for sure. I would have to take a look at that. I couldn't answer that accurately.
All right. I know it's the case in some cases. I don't know if it's the case in ours, but
sure.
it certainly does represent a path back to a little more sanity and a little more normal lifestyle instead of just throwing somebody in jail or throwing somebody in prison, which, as we've learned over the years, doesn't often lead to good things, does it?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it's if we're just looking at it from an enforcement side, you know, that could be a revolving wheel. You know, we would potentially be dealing with the same clients over and over again, and unless those individuals are, like I said, getting help for themselves or trying to crawl out of that addiction, you know, we are going to see recidivism within the jail here, and we want to avoid that. It's healthier for the community, and it's a lot easier for the taxpayers.
I'm talking with Houghton County Sheriff Josh Saarinen about the drug problem in Houghton County. Crystal meth, you said, is one of the more common drugs that we're looking at this point. Certainly, that seems to be the one that I'm seeing a lot in the press releases that come out from Upset and arrests that are made in the region. But we've also had a big problem with these prescription painkillers that have infiltrated our society. How much of that are we seeing here in the area?
Yeah, so prescription painkillers that are prescribed by a doctor. You know, I had a chance for a brief time to work as a plainclothes detective here at the sheriff's office previous to meth coming in, and you know, there was a lot of addiction that started with opiates through these prescription painkillers. That was along with marijuana at that time. Those were the two kind of drugs of choice in about 2008, 2009. That's kind of evolved, and you know, we hear opiate crisis throughout the United States, and it is, you know, I can't blame it 100% just on prescription drugs, but, you know, that kind of segued those opiates into people using heroin and now fentanyl and carfentanil.
Fentanyl is a nasty, nasty thing.
That's correct. Yeah, it's much stronger than heroin. And even the opiate prescription pills, and unfortunately, with that addiction, they're chasing that high. You know, there's you know, once they their bodies become used to taking a certain amount, you know, they want to experience the high of what they had before, so they start using another drug, for example, prescription pills, to potentially trying heroin, and then from heroin to fentanyl. And you know, the big problem and challenge with fentanyl is, you know, the drug dealers from out of the area, they're worrying about making money, so they're oftentimes disguising heroin as being, and it's actually fentanyl. Poses a real big problem because it's very dangerous to inject if the person using it doesn't know. You know, they potentially could be getting a much larger dose than they're thinking.
Yeah, it's not exactly a regulated industry, illegal drug sales. As a user, you really have no idea what you're getting.
That's correct. Yep, that's the dangerous part, and that's you know, that's the biggest reason these teams like Upset and the Interdiction trying to get those drugs off the streets before they come into our community. And you know, a big part is making sure they stay out of the hands of our children and youth.
You mentioned marijuana. We've had now for the last couple of years legal recreational marijuana sales here in the Copper Country. Has legalizing that made any difference in your look at the drug problem from a law enforcement standpoint?
You know, it really hasn't. I can't say that we have increased statistics for anything involving marijuana as far as arrests or operating under the influence of marijuana. You know, the biggest things that, you know, since marijuana's been legalized and the people voted that in, and unfortunately we have these harder drugs that are coming in, and those are really our main focus to get off the streets.
How do you, if somebody's driving on the influence of marijuana, with alcohol, you can give them a blood test, you can make them blow into the breathalyzer. How do you assess somebody who might be driving under the influence of marijuana?
Well, there's several tests that that the deputies and troopers are trained in. There's some specialized testing where they can do tests as far as like eye movements, nystagmus, and those people are typically brought in for a blood test later.
Has the legalization of marijuana eased your burden at all? Are there fewer illegal marijuana salespeople that you have to go after now?
Yeah, that's correct. Like I said, early in my career, you know, that's what we were enforcing, marijuana and prescription pills. We really don't have any marijuana complaints. It's very infrequent that we have any complaints about marijuana.
I know you were involved with Upset. You did some undercover work. When I get these press releases from Upset about the arrests that they make, it often says that this was the result of a 2-month or a 3-month investigation. Can you run me through what goes on in one of those investigations? How do they get started? And what eventually do you have to have in place to finally make an arrest?
Sure. It's kind of a clandestine in nature program, but to start out with any investigation, it could potentially be a tip. It could be an informant. We get that information, start developing a case, and normally the time that it takes, we're able to make sure that we're establishing that these individuals are actually bringing all these drugs in from different areas. Like I said before, we're not looking at making quick arrests with people that are just having drugs in their possession and struggling with addiction. We're making sure we're focusing on kind of the big fish that are introducing it here. So it oftentimes takes a bit of time, and in cases where we do have informants or undercover officers, we're also kind of protecting them as well, to make sure that we're not getting any of our individuals hurt.
Is there real money in bringing drugs into the Copper Country? Because I read these things that, you know, they're pulled over in this old ratty car doing this or something. I'm thinking, these people don't look like they're getting rich and becoming big international drug barons off of this. Is there a big financial incentive?
Yeah, locally here, I wouldn't say that there would be an incentive, but the people that are introducing it, that money flows back to them, and from then it seems like it flows in a southerly direction down towards, you know, we've had cases where we've linked up drugs coming through Oklahoma and Southern California and coming across the border. So really, the people that are benefiting from this are our cartels, not even in our country.
So what's the incentive for the people who are bringing in a bag full of drugs from Milwaukee or someplace like that up here to the Copper Country? What's the incentive for them to do that?
Some of those people are making some money. Some of them are user dealers, so they themselves have some addiction problems as well. But they've chose to work with that next tier up to get benefit by bringing drugs up here. The people in the cities, the main dealers that are selling, they really don't care about our community. They don't care about our individuals. They don't care about the people that they're using to bring drugs up here. They're the ones benefiting from the money. So oftentimes there is some addiction in that as well.
Okay, so many of them are funding their own habit, basically.
Correct.
All right. Talking with Houghton County Sheriff Josh Saarinen about the drug situation here in the Copper Country. And you said that it was about 15 years or so ago that you were given the prediction that we'd have a crystal meth outbreak in the area, and that has certainly come true. Are you seeing any new drugs on the horizon? Is anybody making that prediction now about where we might be in a decade?
I don't have any predictions now, like the immediate you know, the immediate predictions, like we've talked about, is the fentanyl and the carfentanil. And I've heard and watching the news and different reading different reports, you know, fentanyl's coming in different forms. Whether that be tablets or colored tablets or things that, unfortunately, I couldn't say if they're directly targeting our youth, but that certainly seems like a way to me that they're looking at getting into the next generation. So that's very problematic, and I think that's a situation that we really need to be focusing on now, is making sure that, you know, these drugs are not going to our youth and creating another generation of people with struggles.
How can we reach out to our young people? I mean, that's been a question we've been asking for a long, long time, to keep them from getting started. Of course, young people tend to think that they're going to live forever. They're impervious to problems. They don't understand sometimes the life effects that decisions can have. What kind of things can we do effectively to tell our young people, don't do this?
Yeah, I think as law enforcement, we work with the schools a lot. Previously, there have been programs like DARE. That's been gone for a few years now, but that's something that I'm a real advocate for trying to start up again. So from the law enforcement side, and then that comes to the community side and just a family side too. You know, we need to have families aware of this to be able to communicate it to their children that, you know, this is no laughing matter. You know, There's a lot of danger in these drugs. Unfortunately, we see overdose deaths from things like fentanyl. We need to make sure that not only law enforcement, but our community and our parents are teaching our kids to stay away from it.
Are we seeing problems with our students in this area?
I can't say that we're seeing problems with harder drugs. I know there's been some accessibility problems with things like marijuana and vaping products and stuff like that. I believe that's in the schools. You know, we have had investigations where, you know, youth will have parties and somebody will introduce something that, a drug that's not necessarily what they're thinking it is, like a party type drug. It's actually a methamphetamine product, and those are real issues. And again, that comes down to the dealer not caring. They're looking to get people addicted.
Have we had any problems with kind of innocent exposure to marijuana since that has become legalized? Mom and dad have it in the household. Grandma and grandpa have it in the household, because I know a lot of older folks use marijuana for various reasons, and the kids get a hold of it. Are we seeing that at all?
You know, I don't really have any statistics on that. I haven't heard of many problems. Again, that's an education thing, I think, with that family, and to make sure the kids are staying away from it. You know, as youth, we're all very curious all the time, and that comes down to a security issue, I think, at home.
What happens to these people who are arrested? They go into the court system. It can take a long time for those cases to play out in some cases. Are most of them being convicted, sentenced, spending time in jail?
Yeah, spending time in jail. So there's two different avenues that we went down when I was on the team, and they continue to go down. There's local prosecution, you know, where people potentially could be sentenced to jail here or Michigan prison. And there are several cases where those cases had went to the federal level. So they're transferred from the local case here to the Marquette Federal Court, and they're adjudicated through that system.
What do I do if I suspect there's a drug problem? Let me start with this scenario. I'm a parent. I pop into my kid's room, and there's a little baggie filled with some pills that I don't recognize. What do I do?
First off, I would talk to your children, and I would call the police immediately if it's an unknown substance, especially. And for some reason, if it were to be something like fentanyl or carfentanil, we don't want people handling that. Could be dangerous even to the touch. So notify your local law enforcement, sheriff's office, Michigan State Police. We would come in and take a look to see what kind of drugs they are. We would seize them and test them to see what kind of substance it is.
So it can be, as you said, even dangerous just to touch those?
Yeah, it potentially could be any type of skin exposure with, say, the drug carfentanil could be dangerous to a person.
Is my kid going to get in trouble?
That's a good question. And then we work with the family on those kind of instances, and then we also work through juvenile court here. So there's a lot of factors that could go into it.
Something larger scale. Maybe I'm at work and I know that there's somebody who's distributing some pills around, or I go out to a bar or an entertainment venue or something like that, and I see that somebody is distributing, maybe even selling some drugs. How do I proceed with something like that?
So if one wished, they could call in an anonymous complaint, again, to your local police or sheriff or state police. Our HoutonSheriff.com website has a link to leave an anonymous tip, and Upset's website out of Marquette, if you Google Upset, they also have a tip line where you can submit tips by phone or online.
Will I have to be tracked down and testify at some point, or do I just stay completely anonymous?
Not necessarily. If you'd want to stay anonymous, you could. Like I said, these investigations sometimes do start from anonymous tips, and then we build from there. So one's anonymity can be protected.
Does it feel like an endless battle?
It doesn't feel like an endless battle. It's a very gratifying job to do. It's tough because we do see an influx in it. But when you see the people that are coming out of recovery that we've potentially investigated and arrested, it feels really good that, you know, you see somebody getting healthy and, you know, being a productive member of our community. So those are things that really help us to look upstream rather than downstream.
And we certainly have much better routes to recovery now than we had years ago, and excellent organizations in the Copper Country that do that. We've talked about some of them on Copper Country Today in the past as well. Sheriff Josh Saarinen, thank you for your time. Thank you for the update on drugs here in the Copper Country.
Well, thank you, sir, for having me. It's my pleasure.